Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
Discover what happens when the perfect love turns chaotic and everyone in their circle is relentlessly impacted by a devastating mistake never meant to surface. That's the premise of the new book by tonight's guest, Dante Morrison. Listeners, it's time to tune everything out and get into another captivating 30 minutes on A Touch of Grace. I am your host for this literary flight, and my name is author G.D. Grace. I am five-time self-published author and the producer of the show. A Touch of Grace is being broadcasted live from the exciting San Francisco Bay Area. The date is Thursday, August 11th, 2011, and the time is 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Today's guest comes to us straight from the land of movie stars and bright lights, Los Angeles, California, and I'm thoroughly thrilled to have him on the show this evening. He is a motivational speaker and the author of the book currently in circulation entitled The End of the Rainbow. Ladies and gentlemen, please kick back, relax, and help me welcome to A Touch of Grace, Dante Morrison. So, Dante, how is your creative energy this morning, or this evening, I should say?
It's actually good. I'm in a really good place, and I'm just excited about what's all in store. So, yeah, I'm good.
All right. Well, strap your seatbelt on, and I'm going to hit you up with a little bit of information about yourself and for the listeners. So, a little birdie tells me that you're the type of guy that likes to ask the questions that ruffle feathers and get folks thinking outside the box. So, what is it that drives that motivation in you, sir?
Well, I've always been a people person, and I love how people think, and as much as you always hear about how, you know, we all have all these major differences and this one don't like that one, and whether it be racially, age, or whatever the case may be, if you ask the right question, we're pretty much all on the same page, and we're probably all going to have the same kind of response or want to take the same action if put in a certain situation. So usually like on my Facebook page, I always ask questions that are way out the box, that have a shock factor. And then to get the feedback from all my different friends, because I have a diverse collection of friends, to hear them all pretty much say the same thing is just hilarious to me, because we're not that different when it all boils down.
Okay, 6 degrees by separation. Very interesting. I had to hit you with that one first. Now, here's another one. So I'm sure that if you are able to bring it like that, you must be very capable of dealing with the reactions you must get, right?
Yeah, I am. And that just comes with life, just going through life and dealing with certain circumstances. And it comes with also being secure in who you are and realizing that everybody is not going to, you know, either agree with your views or your outlook. You know, and you got to be fair to let people do that, because usually when I do ask questions like that, I will get people that go against the norm, and they'll either, you know, aggressively voice their opinions, but I have to remind everyone who is on the conversation, look, we got a lot of folks to be who they are and learn how to agree to disagree without just severing ties, you know, and I think that's the problem with a lot of people. Once the argument starts,
you're getting into
crap.
Or getting into knockdown dragdowns, as I'm pretty sure you've witnessed in your life.
Right. All because we don't agree on the same thing, instead of just letting the person be who they are. I think that's just what's the most important thing.
So would you say that is a trait based on a lack of education or a lack of communication skills?
I think it's more so communication, because I mean, people can be highly educated and still not know how to have healthy debate.
Amen.
So I just think it comes from a lack of communication and just not really knowing how to get your point across and be done with it and understand that everyone is just not going to agree with everything you believe in.
That's a real truth. So how old were you when you realized that you had a drive driven to take leaps of faith that would put you in arenas such as the ones that you encounter as a motivational speaker?
I think it really started coming to play like my early 30s, like 33, 34, when I started realizing that I had a gift to really capture an audience with how I presented myself. Because I try not to, when I do my talks or educate or whatever, I try to reach everybody where they are and not talk over people's heads. Because you can't have dialogue if you're the only one talking. You know, that's just me doing a monologue to a bunch of people and they're sitting there listening. But dialogue comes when I'm talking in a way that people can understand it, and then it's propelling them to want to say something back in response. And that's how people grow, and that's what communication is all about. It goes both ways. I don't give speeches. I give presentations.
Oh, you don't give speeches, you give presentations. Well, I heard that. You know, the thing that I like about you is that you are very confident, and you definitely understand what it is you're doing, because I have sat through conferences where people are doing exactly what you don't do, and that is using the big words and pretty much talking to hear themselves speak. So has there ever been a moment during a presentation where you catch yourself and you say, well, wait a minute, you know, I'm kind of looking into the audience and they're looking like those in the headlights. Has there ever been moments like that for you?
Yeah, that happens. It happens. And I think that's another part of just the gifting that I have, that I'm able to wake them back up, you know. And I know that a lot of people, when they go to presentations or whatever, even when some people go to church, you know, and if the pastor is talking in a monotone voice, you're going to doze off because it just gets boring, you know. And I have learned the power of just, you know, making your voice just fluctuate and just all about how you present it. And you got to be engaging. You have to be engaging.
Right, right. You definitely do have to be engaging, and it's great that you understand that. Being as young as you are, to have that gift of engaging people with whatever the message is that you are conveying at that time. So what type of messages are your motivational speaks about?
I do a lot of talks about HIV, HIV education, primarily to youth, especially within the African-American community, because it's just not a lot of dialogue occurring on a level that's really going to impact the young people like it should. So I just try to get them to be comfortable and knowledgeable about having the conversation. Because like we all know, most African-American communities, you know, are rooted in the church. And the church has its own way of delivering messages about sex, sexuality, sexual behavior, and whatever. And I try to just step in and give a lot of practical information and how they can just do things differently. And then when it comes to the kids, I mean, we know what they're doing, especially thanks to social media and the way they can meet each other. They're doing things that, you know, back in our day, we would never think of doing. So I'm just trying to get that message out, because people are dying senselessly, and it's really time for a change to come. 20-something, 30 years into the virus, it's really time for a change.
God, you're making me feel old, because I remember, because I'm 49, I remember when HIV first came on the scene, that first wave of people. As a matter of fact, I lost a good friend of mine, Kevin Stockman, may he rest in peace, to that disease. And, you know, when it hit, you know, they didn't know what it was. Supposedly it was like the gay man's plague. And then,
right,
of course, years later now we realize that that's not it. So you've been working for 10 years in the field of HIV/AIDS. So was there something that touched your life that made you want to join those special forces out there fighting in this courageous struggle?
Mm-hmm, definitely. Well, I was diagnosed in 99. And, of course, you know, being at that age, young, African-American, not really knowing about the virus, because it was viewed, like you just said, as a white gay man's disease. So it wasn't really talked about in the black community on the level it should have. And that was 15 years into the virus. So just through going through the seasons I went through of accepting what I had and still trying to educate myself so that I wouldn't die, you know, I was discovered, for lack of a better word, by my doctors and case managers because I had such an upbeat and positive attitude. I mean, I've always been a lively person, and even though I went through my slump after being diagnosed of just those whole suicidal thoughts and what did I do wrong and oh my God and all that, I realized that I had a power to really help someone else not have to go through that. You know, whether they're newly diagnosed or just out there living a promiscuous life or just putting themselves at risk, I had a power in me that can really deter some behaviors. And just from that, I just began to use it.
You know, that's I guess that testimony that you just gave, I mean, I'm teary-eyed right now. Because, I had no idea that you had HIV.
Okay.
But... yeah, I didn't. And the thing is that my friend, it's been like almost 30 years ago, and then here I am realizing that this disease is still here. It's still very much alive, and promiscuity, it seems to me, like is back on the rise. So I guess the thing that I, because you took my next question, I was going to say, has anyone close to you been inflicted with this horrible disease? But you know, you yourself firsthand experience. So I know that you recovered and here we have you now, and you said in the beginning there were suicidal thoughts. So what made you decide to get up out of the coffin and live regardless of your infliction?
I think after I did my first public talk, it was to a room full of doctors and nurses, and they wanted someone who was positive to talk about being positive and going through the system. And because I had, you know, had a couple of nurses or healthcare providers that weren't as cordial as I needed them to be, you know, I was able to educate them and let them know that I'm not HIV. My name is Dante. You know, so don't refer to me as this virus. You know, I'm a human. And I think from doing that, I saw that I was in a place to make change. And then when I start talking to young people, I saw that they just didn't know. And I really worked heavily in urban populations, you know, in the Black community, and they just had no idea of how to get the virus and all that kind of stuff. All they had was Magic Johnson. And, of course, he's unreachable. You know, and I'm a face that they could possibly see in the mall one day. They could just see out and about, someone they can just reach out to and get some sound advice from that can kind of help them through those adolescent changes when their hormones are raging. They want to have sex, but it's like I don't want to die from sex. So I just realized I had a purpose, and somebody had to do it because there were so many people who are positive that are not speaking up, who are not disclosing, who are still having sex with other people without a condom. It's just so many out there that are doing that, and I could not be one of them or watch that occur.
I hear you. And you know something, you're a remarkable young man. I just want to let you know that right now. And it's been such a pleasure to have made your acquaintance because I feel like we're going to be longtime friends. But there's a quote on your site that just struck me, and now it all makes sense to me. The book of Hosea 4:6 states, "My people perish. My people perish for a lack of knowledge."
Right.
Yeah. So.
Right.
So, and I. What does that mean to you?
It just means that people are dying because they're just not getting the education they need, you know, and they're walking around living based upon a stigma and not in the reality. So they're classifying people as this or as that, you know, and there's so many folks out there that still equate, you know, homosexuality with pedophilia, you know, and that's ignorant. That's just an ignorant statement. There are people that are blaming, you know, gay men for the infection of Black women. That's ignorant, you know, and that's a lack of education, a lack of dialogue, you know, a lack of just sitting down and getting understanding on how we can just really make a change. If we all start to work together and have the right kind of conversation and stop the finger pointing, and it's just needed.
Well, you know it is, and you know I would like to commend you on your courageousness to, you know, step foot into a church, because that's one thing that I really have to make peace at, because you know much of my hatred of myself in the earlier years stemmed from sitting through sermons that talked about, you know, being an abomination and all of these things. So, you know, to actually have the courage to go into a church as a gay man, mm-hmm. and actually deliver the message of life, you know, with raised brows, you know, I'm pretty sure. I think that the church has come a long way, but I believe that it has a long way to go. But what we're going to do now is we're going to shift a little bit, because we could go on, and as a matter of fact, I believe that I definitely want to have a show where we can definitely explore HIV and the progression of it. I'll write a whole script just dedicated to that, because there's so much that I want to know. I lead somewhat of a sheltered life. I've been through years of, like, celibacy, so we could definitely go on and on about that, but I just want to thank you for being out there on the front lines, my brother, because I really appreciate that.
Definitely, no problem, man.
Okay, so you've written, let's talk about your writing now. So you've written for several magazines,
mm-hmm.
appeared on both radio and television, and now
mm-hmm.
you have released your novel, The End of the Rainbow. So how does it feel inside to have set out and accomplished this literary feat?
It's awesome. It's awesome. I mean, I know that's a cheesy word, but it's awesome. Because it was a long time coming, and I had, like, sat on it for so long because of where just I was in life and the subject matter of the book. I was just torn because I was just relying, you know, so much on just other things to satisfy me, but nothing was really giving me the pleasure I was getting out of writing and just seeing the effect of people that were reading my works. So, yeah, just to have a book out, I mean, it's great. It's a great feeling.
Okay, well, why don't you fill us in, the listeners out there and me, tell us a little bit about the literary project and the significance of that title, The End of the Rainbow.
Okay, the title, well, the book is about a well, you kind of read it, the whole preface in the beginning, but it's about a an upscale black gay couple, and it's two men that are, I mean, head over heels in love with each other. These two brothers, they love each other, and they've built a strong bond with one another, and they have a strong circle of friends, and you know, they make up what we would really call a family. You know, it really is a family. One of them is being pulled by the church, you know, because, you know, growing up in church, you deal with that, you know, should I be gay, should I not be gay, does God love me, all that. However, he's over that hurdle, he's secure with himself, and the other one is just as secure. But something occurs that really just tests their relationship, and it tests the closeness of their friends, and it also challenges, you know, the parent of one of them, because it is a circumstance that, you know, that really will cause people to just go into a spiral. And through that, it's a lot of familiar situations that a lot of readers have endured. And when I wrote the book, I didn't want it to just cater to the gay audience, you know, the black gay audience. I wanted people to read it and see that it's all about relationship, you know, and what a relationship really is. And love is love. You know, we can do the whole gay, straight, wrong or right debate, you know, until Christ comes back. But it's clearly all about love. And these two brothers, they loved each other, you know, and how does love overcome things? You know, when it's a matter of the heart, how does it overcome? And the end of the rainbow is because we always look for that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. That's the myth, that it's just this pot of gold at the end just waiting for us. When you get to the end, you're going to just be rewarded. Well, the end of this rainbow has rewards, but it comes in a way that no one would ever expect. So it's a controversial read because it has a lot of things in it, and it's actually the first of three. So it is a trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do like to ruffle feathers, so
exactly.
I can only imagine what's in that book. You know, I was looking at your pages, and I saw people holding copies of your book in their hands, and some of the comments that have been made about your novel, The End of the Rainbow. Is there a memorable, let me see the word that I'm looking for. a recount of someone that had read the book, do you is there a memorable response that just said, okay, they're getting it?
Yeah, most of them come from people that will write me on Facebook. They will message me in my inbox, and they will go into great detail about how the book really hit home with where they are personally in their life or with the relationship that they either just got out of or went through, or even when it comes down to their friends. So it was amazing to get the responses I was getting from both gay and straight, male and female, to just say, I read your book, and I never knew that it was like that in the gay lifestyle. You know, that's what a straight brother told me, that he had classified gay men as all acting one way. And just reading my book, he saw that it's really about a connection and about a relationship. And I've had women tell me the same thing, that they never view two men being together on that level, because everybody always focuses on the sex.
You know, that is so amazing to me. I had a guy tell me that my soulmate was meant to be a woman because of the, you know, Adam's rib thing and all of this. And it is so, it's sobering to know that there are people out there that still aren't getting it.
Right.
You know, but then on the flip side of that, you know, writers like you, writers like me, you know, writers like the late Elaine Harris, the James Earl Hardys, the Stanley Bennett Clays, are out here to try to educate people, because it's almost like, you know, I tell, you know, anybody, it's like, just like you look at a woman, if you are a man and you're heterosexual, or a woman and you're looking at a man and you're heterosexual, that's how it is, you know, for gay people. So it's just amazing that here we are in the year 2011, and people are still trying to come to grasp with that. But I believe that it has a lot to do with what you said a little earlier, especially about this AIDS thing, is that there is a lack of communication and understanding. You know, I know in my family, people clammed up, you know, as opposed to talking about sex. So I commend you for wanting to step off into that area and enlighten people, because that's the only way people are going to know.
Right. And it's just time for these conversations to take place, because I'm really just over all the divide. You know, I mean, it's just so much separation unnecessarily, you know, and we're losing focus on what the bigger issue is. You know, I just think if we just started having more real dialogue, people will really begin to live healthier, happier lives, you know, and it's just a shame because, you know, all these suicides and all this stuff is occurring because we're not having the necessary conversation to make people feel valued and whole.
You are so wise. you are just so wise. I'm just enjoying this conversation. And I, as a writer myself, I guess the biggest joy that I've gotten in my life, because, you know, the depression thing and the substance abuse thing that I experienced early on in life, you know, and where I'm at right now, I can appreciate someone who has a healthy mental outlook on things. And when you obtain that mental healthy outlook, you felt driven to go out there and help others see. So this question I have, what did it feel like when you held your book in your hand for the first time?
I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't believe that I was actually looking at something that I had, you know, typed, you know, that came from my mind, that I had been, you know, working on for so long, that I had been resisting putting out there for so long. And just to look at it, like, it was a trip, because it was like, okay, what now? What next? You know, what's the next step? Now it's here. People are going to read it. So just prepare yourself for whatever feedback comes, you know, whether it's negative or positive. You know, just get ready for it. And, you know, keep the skin thick. But at the end of the day, you can officially say you are a published author. So that was just, and can't nobody take that from me. You know, no matter if you like it or not, I'm a published author.
Don't let them. Now, here's a question that I have from the chat room. Somebody wants to know about your love life. So are you single or blissfully free and in love?
I'm blissfully in love.
All right. All right. Blissfully. Well, I had to ask. You can't speak from the chat room. And I always try to oblige the listeners. It goes, somebody puts, he's my baby's daddy.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so now with, you know, we got about 5 minutes left, but I wanted to get some plugs in because on my WordPress blog, I definitely have the link to so that people can actually purchase your book. But what is your web address?
www.dante, D-O-N-T-A, Morrison, Morrison.com. And if people buy it from my website, they can use PayPal, and I personally mail those out autographed to whoever. So when you get it from my website, it comes straight from me.
And what are the what's the price of the book? Because I definitely want one.
$15.
Okay. All right. So
and then it's also
out there.
Yeah, and also on Amazon.com. It's on Amazon.com as well. You know, just go to Amazon, type in Dante Morrison, and you will see the end of the rainbow. It's a lovely, tranquil picture on the cover.
It sure is. I really do. Who designed that for you anyway?
I did. Everything. I had to do everything. Self-publishing.
So you're a jack of all trades. You understand. you understand.
Right.
So put time for a second because I want you to share some final words with the listeners before we go, and I want you to have a little bit of more time. Plus, I want to come back to ask you about book signing events. But so here we go.
Okay.
Tomorrow, there is no exception to the talent that we're going to have here on A Touch of Grace. So at 8 p.m. tomorrow, which is Friday 12, I'll be interviewing another incredible author by the name of Terry Angel Mason, and we will be discussing his life and his literary projects as well. And I'm constantly networking to bring other talented artists in the world of literary and entertainment to the show. So keep your eyes open, and I will be posting guest information on Facebook. I mean, the calendar is filling up for A Touch of Grace. But for more information, you can go to my blog, http://author2b, that's A-U-T-H-O-R, the number 2, B as in boy, E, .wordpress.com, as well as I will be posting the information on the Blog Talk Radio site. So, question for you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any external events that are going to be happening for you, like soon, that you want people to know about?
Currently, no. Unfortunately, no. I'm actually, I will be in Atlanta this weekend, but it's for work. So I'll be on the East Coast, but nothing is coming up. But I am looking for people in L.A. to host book signings. I know it's a lot of book clubs out here. So I'm just trying to connect with people that do have book clubs. They're looking for a new book, new authors, that type thing. So, yeah, if anybody wants to host me, I will gladly come with the books. You can buy them, and I will talk about the book and everything.
Well, there's something that's cooking that I'm going to tell you about after the show. because it's going to do just that. And I think I was talking to you a little bit about it prior to the show. So are there any final thoughts that you want to leave the listeners with?
I just really want to thank everyone that may have tuned in that has purchased my book. I just really appreciate it. Some people just don't know how difficult it is being self-published because you don't really have – well, I personally don't have the financial backing to really promote my book on the level I would love to, you know, to make the big posters and all that kind of stuff. So any support that I get, I 100% appreciate it. Anyone whose life has been changed from reading the story, you know, that was my goal, just to change lives and show people another side of just love and relationships. And, yeah, and thank you for just really offering me this opportunity to just talk about my work and the book and everything. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, and the honor is all mine. And so with that in mind, I just want to say thank you for being a wonderful guest, and in parting, for the listeners as well as you, Dante, I'd like to say live and let live.
There
and
you
cherish
go.
Those you love. Yeah. And you take care of yourself, and we'll be in touch.
Definitely. You too. Thank you.
You're welcome, Dante. God bless.
Bless you.